This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us in the Trocare College Live Line, political analyst Steve Roberts, as we take a look at everything going on in Washington. Steve, I do want to start with what Chuck Schumer said over the weekend. So he will not step down from his post, despite some pressure on him to do so. You have some Democrats mad at him for voting in favor of the Republican spending bill. I thought that, you know, if you were to look at it from their side of things, it was a perfectly reasonable explanation as to why you would vote with Republicans, you know, give them the quote unquote win on this one to avoid something that he thought would have been worse for his party in the long run. It doesn't seem that a lot of people are seeing that, though.
Well, you're right about that, although a lot of people are saying one thing publicly and another thing privately. The fact is, a lot of Democrats privately supported the choice that Schumer made, because he had two bad choices. It's not as if he had a good choice, because as he said very bluntly, if he voted the way the liberals wanted, if he voted to help shut down the government, that just would have been handing Elon Musk yet another weapon to dismantle the federal government, fire federal employees once the government was shut down. Much easier, in his view, to keep a department shut down. So he made a very tough call, and a lot of the Democrats who openly said, let's resist, let's fight, we're privately glad that Schumer stood up along with nine other Democrats and allowed that bill to go forward. It's not as if they liked the bill. They didn't. There are a lot of things in it they despised. But Democrats have very, very, very little power in Washington today. They don't control either House of Congress. They don't control the White House. And very different from the first Trump term, Republicans are much more united behind Trump. During the first term, there were a number of dissidents, moderates, pragmatists, people who had opposed Trump, people who didn't like Trump. They're all gone. I mean, Trump has been very effective and very deliberate at purging the party of virtually anybody. So Democrats are faced with a much more difficult problem today than they were during Trump's first term.
You know, that said, I'm wondering, what do you think is going on with Bernie Sanders? Is he the energy of the party right now? We're seeing these rallies with Sanders and AOC. Are they the leaders of the anti-Trump resistance?
Well, in a sense, yes. It's easy to get up and make a speech. They don't have the responsibility Chuck Schumer has. He has the responsibility as the leading Democratic voice on Capitol Hill, in some ways the leading Democratic voice in the country. One of the problems Democrats have, they don't really have any nationally recognized leaders. You know, Joe Biden has disappeared into exile, so has Kamala Harris. The next generation of leaders in the state houses, Shapiro in Pennsylvania or Whitmer in Michigan, they haven't really emerged fully national stage. So, you know, it's easy for Sanders and AOC to go out there and raise the liberal banner. And it sounds exciting, but the fact is that the liberal wing of the Democratic Party has lived in a perpetual state of delusion for a long time. The idea that somehow if you nominated a liberal like Sanders or AOC, that somehow you could win the presidency. History shows that is totally wrong. If you look at any of the exit polls, only about a quarter of Americans identify themselves as liberals. This is a center country, center-right country. That's where the center of gravity is. So, yeah, they can make speeches and they can rally the minority of liberal resistors, but that's very different from winning the national elections.
Internationally, obviously, everyone reacting to what is happening in Washington, none more so than up in Canada. Their new prime minister, Mark Carney, has called for a federal election. You know, in doing so and giving his speech, he called for Canada to be stronger economically, stronger militarily. And, you know, Mark, we're really close to this because of our close connection here in Buffalo with Canada. You know, a lot of us look at ourselves as, you know, almost a part Canadian because we grew up watching Canadian TV. A lot of us, you know, we have that, we cross the border frequently. We have that kind of relationship. If you're to take that relationship out of it and look at it from, you know, the perspective of someone who isn't that close to Canada, is Trump in his own way building a stronger Canada and, you know, maybe not in the way that people here who are close to Canada want to see it happen, and you're maybe making a little bit of an enemy in doing so, but is he going to accomplish a goal in some respects of having Canada maybe step up and build themselves up a little bit?
Well, that's a reasonable question. I'm not sure I'm well qualified to answer it. I do think that one way to look at this is the whole way that Trump is altering relations with Canada, with Western Europe, with any American ally, is to change the whole basis of the relationship. The whole notion that this is a shared responsibility, that we're in this together, that the everything that relates to the word allies and alliance is now in question, and he's been very open about that. He hasn't said the alliance first. He said America first. He hasn't said, let's be partners with Canada or Mexico. It's let's pressure Canada and Mexico. And the same toward Western Europe, too, by the way. So the question that you're posing, in a way, is what happens to these relationships during 4 years of Trump when he is the one who is redefining the whole essential nature from an alliance to a competition. It could have the effect in Canada and France and other allies to say, well, okay, if we can't depend on the United States, we have to do more things for ourselves. Does that mean, for instance, spending more on defense, which is something that Trump has actually been arguing that Western Europe should be doing for a long time? Does it mean we adopt trading policies that are more protectionist and more self-serving to our industries and not just this open free trade system that has existed in the past? Whether they, you know, use the word stronger, I'm not sure whether it's stronger, but it could well be different because Trump is insisting on changing the basic terms of the relationships with Canada and just about every other American ally around the world.
I guess the big picture question is whether it's Canada or you know, the EU or whoever, do we want them depending on us? And I guess there's positives and negatives to depending on how you look at that question.
Yeah, a lot of this is semantics. You know, Trump would argue, you know, that that Western Europe has depended, and this is primarily a defense question, which doesn't really affect Canada in the same way. Our relations with Canada are largely economics. There are defense treaties, but Canada is not in Europe. Canada is not on the front lines of NATO. Poland is. France is. You know, it's just... I'm not sure whether, as I say, I'm not sure whether the question is stronger, but it will be different because Trump just views relations with other countries in a profoundly different way. He just doesn't have this idea of cooperation. You never hear that word from him. You never hear words like alliance from him. All you do is hear words like competition and dominance. And I'm going to punish Canada with tariffs, and they're going to punish Mexico. This is not the way that American presidents have operated for many, many generations.
Well, Steve, thank you as always. Steve Roberts, political analyst, joining us here on WBEN.